Welcome to the Everything EV podcast from EV Powered. I'm Matt Allen, and this week I'm joined by Ken McMeekin, CEO of Moto Hospitality. So Ken, thanks very much for joining me. I wondered if we could start by, if you could give us a picture of how motorway service areas fit into the EV landscape and into the charging network. Obviously, they're in a unique position as a stopover rather than a destination for drivers. So what challenges does that present for you as an operator, and how do you go about addressing those challenges?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. Motorway service areas, I think, are at the very heart of enabling the transition to electric vehicles. And we set out a number of years ago at Moto to lead that transition to clean energies. If you think, we already provide, you know, over the course of a year at the moment at Moto sites, there's about 120 plus million customer visits where they're stopping. Typically, you know, the most used facility at the moment is to go to the loo. You know, people on a long journey need to stop, take a break. The next thing they need to do is eat and drink, or they need to rest if they're on a long journey. And then the other facility that Motorway Services has always provided and will provide increasingly is refueling of vehicles. So the big opportunity for motorway service areas is to provide the charging infrastructure that will allow more people to have the confidence to make a decision to transition into an electric vehicle, safe in the knowledge that no matter how long the journey is, no matter when they need to stop and actually recharge their car, as well as recharging themselves, they're going to be able to do that because the charging infrastructure has been put in place.
On that subject then, talking about the infrastructure, obviously that's key to the whole thing, to, as you say, to giving drivers that confidence. I know you spoke to Everything EV a couple of years ago. Back then you were aiming to have six high-powered chargers at every Moto location by the end of 2023. How's that panned out? Have you managed to achieve that? Have you exceeded that?
We definitely didn't manage to exceed it in terms of every single motorway service area with the minimum of six, but we achieved a phenomenal amount because we had two out of three of our motorway service areas did actually achieve the minimum of six. And actually what we did was we went way beyond that minimum of six. And an example of that would be Exeter, where we put, instead of a minimum of six, we put 56 ultra rapid chargers, because the 3 years ago, the expected number that was going to be required of a minimum of six, I think, seriously under forecast the amount that was going to be needed in only sort of 3 years' time. So, you know, Exeter is a good example. We realized very quickly six wasn't going to be sufficient, and so we put 56, and already the utilization rate with 56 is telling us we actually need to put even more down because they are so popular and being used so frequently. The sites, the one in three that we weren't able by the end of 2023 to get the minimum of six, will all be completed by the end of this year, 2024. So we were just a year behind where we thought we would be. And that's only been because we couldn't secure sufficient power to be able to put the chargers. We had the chargers, we could have deployed the chargers, we would have hit that target very easily had we been able to get access to power. And that's still the biggest challenge in all of this, has been getting the power. The one thing we can't control is getting power to our sites. And the amount of power that you need to provide at motorway service areas is pretty mind-blowing. A good example, again, if I use Exeter as the one example, the amount of power that we dispense at Exeter is the equivalent sort of power for one third of all the homes in Exeter. That's the amount of power that we're dispensing at Exeter for cars. That's the scale of power. So we, we now have, in terms of numbers of chargers that we've got, we're over 600 of the high power chargers, the ultra rapid chargers. And if you are basing the number of chargers, the minimum of six, we actually, although we only managed to get two-thirds of the sites with the minimum of six, and the remainder will get done this year. In terms of quantum, pure numbers of charges, we actually went way above what the minimum of six would have been on all of our sites, because we actually significantly increased the amount of charges. And the great thing is, if you were to look at the map geographically, we've covered sort of Scotland, Wales, and England, and we're going, down to Exeter and up to Kinross in Scotland. So geographically, the spread, the two in three moto sites that had the minimum of six, meant that geographically you had access to charging en route.
Because that has been one of the issues that's come up around EV charging, is this geographical split where there isn't always a what you call an equitable division of where the charges are. So from your point of view, is that you're managing to provide that across the country, and is that sort of led by data from the sites and from the numbers coming in, or is it just an effort to make sure you're hitting every sort of service area you have?
Look, we set out to make sure that we had every one of our motorway service area sites with the ultra rapid charging facility. And we then were reliant on the respective power companies to give us the power that we needed to be able to deploy it. What I'm really pleased to say is we've been able to geographically get the coverage working with the six DNOs, the power companies, so that we've got a really good geographical spread. It's just we haven't been able yet, but we will soon, in the next sort of 6 to 9 months, we'll have every one of our sites with all of the ultra rapid charging. But when you physically see it on a map, positioned two out of three sites already with ultra rapid chargers, the other sites have got the medium power, the sort of 50 kilowatt charges. We've got the geographical spread that motorists need, and we actually deployed more chargers and more sites than all of the other motorway operators together. And that's because we set out to lead on this 3 years ago, and we'd been doing the work with the power companies to secure sufficient power to be able to deploy as many chargers as we could.
You mentioned Exeter there, and obviously you said you set out with that initial minimum of six, and you've clearly exceeded that substantially. Is that something that you're having to take in mind? Are you sort of aware of the demand at certain sites? You're finding some sites have much higher demand, have much more need for 50, 60 devices.
No, for sure. I'll give you another good example. When we opened Rugby was our first new motorway service area in 13 years, and that was, 2 to 3 years ago now. And when we opened Rugby, we originally were going to open it with the minimum of six, And very quickly, before we opened Rugby, I said I thought that six might not future-proof Rugby as a new site. So why didn't we open with 24? And this is going back to 2021 now, when we opened Rugby. And I genuinely thought, when we opened Rugby with 24 ultra rapid chargers, that that would be future-proof for maybe 5 to 6 years before we'd need to go back and deploy more chargers. Because it got so much usage so quickly and has sustained that usage level, we had to go back and basically deploy another 16 ultra rapid chargers at Rugby. So we're now at 40. And again, we're having to go again and put down even more chargers. So the great thing about Moto, having been sort of leading on this, We've been able to see EV driver behavior in real time. We know where the demand is. We know the demand by day of the week, by time of day. And the only constraint that we've really had in deploying the amount of chargers that we know we need based on the demand has been getting access to power. If we can get unlimited access to power, we can put the right number of chargers down. And the key for us has been making sure that at peak, there are going to be sufficient chargers to cope with the at peak demand. And we've been investing heavily with our partners to ensure that we have been leading by putting, as we did at Rugby and as we've done at Exeter and other sites, we're putting way above the target that had originally been set of the minimum of six, because that's the level of demand that there is. And that utilization rate that it's typically called is already, we believe, industry leading and better than had been achieved in Europe. So from a standing start, we've gone to industry leading in terms of the utilization rates of our chargers and basically proven that if we provide the infrastructure for motorists, then they will actually use that charging infrastructure. And not only that, but they value it and welcome it, because the big advantage, I think, for an EV driver, if you're stopping to charge at moto sites, is you've got all the other facilities as well. Whilst your car's charging, you're also able to go and recharge yourself. And you can use that time, I think, wisely and sensibly. So it's the wider sort of experience. It's not just about charging, but the experience whilst your car is needing to be charged. What are you going to do with that time? And hopefully, what we've been doing is investing heavily in our sites, rolling out new brands, refurbishing our toilets, shower facilities for HGV drivers, because the next big thing that we're also now starting to get our heads around is, as well as cars, we're looking to deploy the first eHGV charging station probably in the first half of 2025. And we're already heavily underway with our plans to think about HGV drivers as well.
That's another challenge in itself, isn't it? The cars and the level of charging that a car requires, or that dozens of cars require, are quite different to then stepping up to HGVs and the demands of their system. So that must present a whole new world of challenges for you, presumably.
It does. And I'd say there's sort of two really big challenges when we think about eHGV. And look, as a country, if we're going to genuinely deliver our decarbonisation targets, we've got to come up with solutions for HGV and the decarbonisation for HGV. The two big challenges, if it's already been a challenge getting power just for cars, and if the power that you're going to need for HGV is as big, if not bigger, then you've got suddenly double, if not treble, the amount of power that we originally were planning that we were going to need. And we need to start deploying that from, as I've just said, from the first half of next year. And I think originally, again, 3 years ago, it was unclear at that stage whether it was going to be hydrogen, was it going to be electric? And things have moved very fast. And in Europe now, they're already deploying eHGV charging stations. And we've been over to look at those. They're here. They're already live. And we're hoping that we'll deploy the first eHGV charging station in the UK and then sort of build on that. But the second, so the first problem is power and the scale of power that's going to be required. And then the second challenge is the amount of space that it takes to be able to supply sufficient charging for EHDV, and we're just working through designs on our motorway service areas so that there is sufficient space for HGVs to be able to stop and charge.
So yeah, it's there are more complicated sort of issues beyond just the power. But as you say, power supply seems to still be the sticking point for a lot of providers, for yourself and for other areas. Is there any progress on that? Is it get I know in previous years it's been a real issue, but is it getting better, or is it, are you still facing the same difficulties you were 2, 3 years ago?
It definitely got a little better, but I would say that was more because of the sort of constant highlighting of the issues and being very vocal about it and trying to gain support, whether it was from DfT or National Highways, working with the likes of OZEV, and then, very public media campaigns to highlight the scale of the problem so that the general public, as well as government and decision makers, really understood that we were at risk of sleepwalking into a major challenge where we just would not have had sufficient power to deploy the number of chargers that we've now been able to roll out. The problem is, as soon as you've got sufficient power for the demand that you've got for the next year or two, very quickly you're going to need to be upgrading with even more power. And so what I think the DNOs have been doing, we've been working with each of the DNOs, the power companies, to basically say, look, by year, this is the amount of power we are going to need by site, and this is our demand forecast through to 2030, through to 2035, and through to 2040. And you need to be planning that amount of power by year. So I'd say what they've been doing better over the last 3 years is that they were slow in getting us the power that we needed, but they started to get us the power that we needed for the short-term demand. They still haven't been able to give us an absolute guarantee that the future power demands that we're going to have, we're sort of almost guaranteed for EV drivers that that power is going to be made available. And it's why I've been campaigning for some time that I really felt we needed to take a more strategic approach in the UK and have the government declare that it was a national priority that the power that's going to be required to put down the charging infrastructure on the strategic road network was in effect going to be guaranteed and made a sort of a guarantee by the power companies, rather than what was originally done was a target was set of a number of charges for motorway operators, but that's not the target that needs to be set. The target that needs to be set and guaranteed is the amount of power that is going to be made available for EV drivers to have the confidence that that charging infrastructure is going to be put in place.
Yeah, because there is the issue that there are the government has set targets for EV sales, EV uptake. It wants people to make this switch, but there's not necessarily the backing to provide the infrastructure and the elements around EV ownership to, as you say, to give people that confidence. So you think there needs to be more sort of officially done to make sure that you and other providers can deliver what drivers need to give them that confidence.
I always felt that there was just, for some reason, some reluctance in government to take a greater ownership for the strategy around how we as a country are going to guarantee motorists that when you make the switch to an electric vehicle, which is the right thing to do over time, when you make that decision, don't worry about the charging infrastructure. And we know, from all the research we do with the EV drivers, the second biggest barrier to making a switch to an electric vehicle is range anxiety and concerns about will you be able to charge your car? We should be able, I believe, the government should be able to reassure drivers to say, look, if you make that decision to switch, the second biggest reason and block for making that switch, we're sort of almost guaranteeing we'll remove because there is going to be sufficient power put in place and sufficient charges that you can get around the strategic road network, which is arguably the most important transport infrastructure in this country, are our roads. I mean, we're an island and people need to travel around. And so, for whatever reason, there just seems to have been this reluctance to declare the strategic road network as a national priority for power. And until they do, we at Moto are always going to be, on behalf of motorists, trying to secure power, but with no commitment from the power companies that target needs to be fulfilled and met if we're going to be able to put the sufficient charging infrastructure in place for drivers.
So we've talked quite a lot about the challenges and the difficulties that are there as you're trying to expand the network. But looking ahead, is there hope? Do you have hope? Are there innovations or sort of plans in place that you think are going to help accelerate any sort of technologies or innovations you think are going to help improve the situation?
Well, look, we've gone a stage further than that, to be honest, rather than hoping, because we've had 3 to 4 years now of the reality. We've made a decision that at Motor, what we're going to do is try and set out to provide up to 50% of the power that is required. We're going to try and secure that ourselves. So rather than waiting and relying and hoping, we are going to look to deploy solar farms adjacent to our motorway service areas where it's feasible and where we can secure the land, where we can get the planning. And we are already well underway with those plans. We've got 4 planning applications in for 4 solar farms, different parts of the country. We're in discussions and have made offers to try and secure another 22 locations where we believe it's feasible for us to deploy solar farms. We are also looking at things like wind, and we're also looking at the technological advances that would allow battery and storage to allow us to better utilize the power that we are able to get onto our sites. And so it's a huge undertaking, but one that we started probably 2 years ago around we're going to have to try and take some of our own destiny into our own hands on behalf of EV drivers by deploying solar farms to generate up to 50% of the power requirements that we're going to have at Moto.
So there's definitely alternatives and other routes you're exploring, which hopefully will help EV drivers have that confidence in the network and in the charging.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I think the more drivers and also ICE drivers, as they come onto a motorway service area and they come onto a Moto site, if they see a bank of EV chargers and EV drivers having a good experience and able to charge their cars and able to also enjoy the experience and not having that range anxiety, I think that more than anything is going to be what will encourage more people to make the switch. is when they can see the reality that the infrastructure's already here. What we're trying to do is plan ahead and make sure that based on our forecasts of the demand and the amount of people that will be switching to an EV car by year, how much power and how much charging we're going to need to be providing on each of our sites, so that visibly what you see is a great experience. And also what EV drivers talk about is a great experience, because I do genuinely believe that one of the best ambassadors for EV and the transition are EV drivers. If EV drivers are talking with great confidence about the reliability, that when you are looking to charge your car, there's going to be sufficient numbers of chargers, they're going to be high powered, it's a fast experience, it's contactless, and the charger's going to work and it's going to be available and you can get up. The more the EV community is talking confidently about the reality of the experience, the more we are making sure that that same experience is going to be repeated in the future as more people switch to an EV car, then I think the quicker people will adopt and have the confidence to adopt. So our focus is entirely on experience and trying to secure sufficient power that we can provide that level of experience that makes it a very positive, virtuous circle. The EV community is having a great experience. They're talking very positively about it. The media, hopefully, are going to be talking positively about it rather than sort of, there isn't sufficient charging infrastructure in place. Talking about actually, there is a great charging infrastructure in place. That the more you can kind of get that positive messaging out there, the more I think you're going to see people having the confidence to make that same switch.
So that's actually something you published the Motofesto last year, and a lot of that was about the challenges you faced, as you say, in terms of power and in terms of making sure there was the imperative to deliver power and things. But it also talks about making EVs more attractive and accelerating EV uptake. Can you just talk a wee bit about why that's important to Moto as an operator, like to see more drivers making this switch?
At the heart of what we are trying to do is the right thing from, the planet's perspective. There is no question when we look at decarbonisation, transport makes up about a quarter of the carbon emissions that we have in the UK. So it's a very big part of the decarbonisation agenda is enabling more people to make that switch into, cleaner energies. So our sort of the heart of what we are trying to do, we have a very simple vision, Motor, and that's been to transform the UK's rest stop experience. And at the heart of that vision is a transition to clean energies. People will still be coming to motorway service areas. They will still be using roads in cars and in HGV vehicles. And if we are able to facilitate and give people the confidence to switch to cleaner energies in those same vehicles, then we will have done a huge amount of good for the planet and for our children in terms of the quality of life that hopefully they will experience by enabling more people to make a decision to switch into a vehicle that basically it's a cleaner energy and better for the environment, better for the planet, better for future generations, and also better for current generations. I mean, this isn't always about doing what's right for the next generation. It's doing what's right for us. So, we're very inspired to, we're very lucky, I think, that Moto just happens to have found itself as one of the biggest enablers of making that transition a reality, because we've got the locations already strategically around the whole of the UK with the largest motorway services operator. We already look after people in their vehicles. So if we can also help them to switch to the clean energies by giving them the confidence the infrastructure's there, then we'll have played a leading part in making that vision that we all have, decarbonisation and doing what's right for the sustainability of the environment and the planet, we'll have played a significant part in making that a reality.
Actually, that's a really positive note to finish on. So, Ken, thanks very much indeed for taking the time to speak to me, and hopefully I'll speak to you again soon. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up to date with all the latest EV news, reviews, and features, visit evpower.co.uk, find us on social media, and subscribe to our YouTube channel.